I invite you again to take your Bible and go to Romans chapter 11. If you do that, Romans chapter 11. I want to read just the verse 33 again. Romans chapter 11 and verse 33. Oh, the depths of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are His judgments and His ways past finding out. Last Saturday, that's a week ago yesterday, April the 21st, while we were vacationing on the sun coast of Florida, a warning came over the television broadcasting potential hurricanes. Tornado. And it was in the area of Newport Ritchie to Brooksville, and we were smack dab in the middle of that area in a place called Hudson. I have to say that a carnal thought went through my mind. And the carnal thought was, what kind of a God who would allow disasters like tornadoes to happen? In recent years, some shocking things have happened in our world that all of us have witnessed by way of the news media. On Friday, March the 11th, 2011, an offshore earthquake off the coast of Japan, as you know, caused a tsunami, and a wall of water swept houses and cars and ships and people away. Power was knocked out, and the cooling system to a nuclear power plant was wiped out, and it became a pretty devastating thing, what happened in Japan. January the 12th, 2010, it was a Tuesday, a 7.0 earthquake hit Haiti. And for the next 12 days after that, there were 52 strong aftershocks from that earthquake. 316,000 people died. 300,000 people were hurt and injured, in addition to the 316,000 who died. 1 million people were made homeless. 250,000 homes were destroyed in the tiny country of Haiti. Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, and the second poorest country is the country of Bolivia. What kind of a God allows disasters like that to happen? Some people would say, I think God's got some explaining to do. And then in the summer of 2005, as a matter of fact, it was Monday morning, April the 29th, Hurricane Katrina hit the coast of New Orleans. And you know what happened there. The storm surge breached the levee system that they had, and 80% of the city of New Orleans flooded. And 1,836 people was the number of the official death count of people in New Orleans. And can I respectfully say again, maybe God has some explaining to do. One news reporter reporting on Katrina said this, and I quote him exactly. He said, if this world is the product of intelligent design, then the designer has some explaining to do. Who is responsible for all of the disasters, the tornadoes, the earthquakes, and the tsunamis, and all of that kind of thing that happened? Are these just freak things that happen? Natural disasters are not good. They're not good for God's reputation. As a matter of fact, some of us would like to try to save God's image as being a loving God. So how do we fit these terrible things that obviously God allows to happen? I mean, does He order them to happen? Is the devil responsible for these things? Is there some way we can get God off the hook? I want to talk about three things this morning. I want you to leave knowing three words. The first word is complexity. And the second word is responsibility. And the third word is the word theology. I want to talk about the complexity of God. Now, these verses that we read in Romans chapter 11, starting at 33 to 36, are like a doxology. They come at the end of the Apostle Paul writing about how God was treating the nation of Israel. He talks about all the privileges that Israel had and how Israel in unbelief crucified Christ and they were set aside and how God's going to work with Israel again in the future. And when he gets done talking about that, he kind of breaks into a doxology. And that's when he says, oh, the depth of the wisdom of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. I guess you could really say that God's all wise. God is infinite in his understanding. God knows everything. There isn't anything that God needs to comprehend because He has full comprehension of everything there is. How unsearchable are His judgments? In the New American Standard Version, it says, how unfathomable are His judgments? It's alluded to in the Amplified Version, and it says, how inscrutable are His judgments? The original Greek is an interesting word when it talks about how unsearchable are his judgments. It refers to a hunter who is trying to track an animal through the forest, and he can't see the animal's tracks. He doesn't know which way the animal is running. And that's the same with God. You can't always see God's tracks. You don't understand fully what God's doing. Like the psalmist said, Psalm 77:19, thy way was in the sea, thy paths were in the mighty waters, and thy footsteps can't be known. God, we don't understand all of the things that you do. When David was talking about God's omniscience, how God knows everything, he said this, such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain unto it. Isaiah the prophet said a similar thing. He said, talking about God, my ways are not your ways, neither are my thoughts your thoughts, said the Lord. And the next verse says, for my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts are higher than your thoughts. Now, how God reasons and thinks is beyond our ability to understand. Quite frankly, I can't figure God out. And it says here, oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments. I can't trace God and explain God out in everything. And it says, and his ways past finding out. I can't tell you how and why God conducts himself. I don't understand his methods. God is very mysterious to my mind. He is a way beyond me. I'm not as smart as he is. I can't figure him out. He's God. And I'm just a puny human being. I like how Eugene Peterson put the next verse 34 and 35 in the message. He says, is there anyone around who can explain God? Anyone smart enough to tell God what to do? Isn't that what it says? Who has known the mind of the Lord? Is there anyone around who can explain God? Well, I can't. Or who has become his counselor? Is there anyone who can give God advice? That's what a counselor does. The obvious answer is no. Or who has first given to him, and it shall be repaid to him. Is there anyone who has done God such a favor? God says, oh, well, he did such a favor for me. I just got to be nice to him. No, obviously, God is God. Proverbs 11:14 says it's good to have a multitude of counselors. It says in a multitude of counselors, there's safety. And those of us who are living on earth, when we face some critical decisions in life, it's good to bounce those things off of other people. And they can sometimes guide us and keep us from making mistakes, but God never needs anyone to guide him and give him advice on anything, because he is the all-knowing, all-sovereign God of eternity. God's ways are not hard to find out. God's ways are impossible to find out. That's what it says here. His ways are past finding out. We see the backside of the tapestry. God sees the pattern on the front side. But we only see the backside. Eliu, one of the comforters of Job, remember those fellows? Eliu said this. He said, behold, God is great, and we do not know him. Meaning, we do not understand and comprehend God. We are never able to understand God. Every disaster that happens is in the scope of his world or cosmic plan. We can't figure him out. Have you ever had that thought go through your head? What if you had God's power for 24 hours? What would you do? If you had God's power for 24 hours, would you wipe out poverty? If you had God's power for 24 hours, would you get rid of war? Would you get rid of disasters? Listen, if you had God's wisdom, you'd leave things as they are. Right? Where is God in all this, some people say, at the end of these disasters when they happen? Where's God in all of this? I thought he was a God of love. Where's God's love in all of this, killing 316,000 people in the poorest country of the world? Where is God's love in all of this? God's love is explained fully at the cross. That's where his love is. There is an unreserved manifestation of God's love that is so inconceivably infinite. at the cross. God loves us. That's the complexity of our... How big is your God? Is He one that you have to explain everything He does? Is God no smarter than the smartest person on earth? How big is your God? I call this message our mysterious God. And the first thing to understand is the complexity of God. You can't understand, I can't understand who he is and all he does and why he does what he does. Because I've never seen the world plan that God has. Let's talk about the responsibility for disasters. Now, in a preliminary way, let me say something first. Let's begin by saying that it's important for us to understand that there's a vast difference between the world that God originally created and the world that exists today. There's a vast difference because sin has entered in. Sin now shows itself, of course. We have all kinds of things that happen that are terrible, earthquakes and hurricanes and tsunamis and mudslides and tornadoes and floods. We are living in a once perfect, now flawed world. Sin has changed things. Paul even alluded to it in Romans chapter 8. Let me see if I can put my hand on those verses. Let me read this to you. It says, "For the earnest expectation of the creation earnestly waits for the revealing of the sons of God." Now listen to this. "For creation is subject to futility, not willingly, but because of Him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself will be delivered from the bondage of corruption." And the next verse says, "For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now." Creation is not what it once was. The original perfect creation that God made, sin changed a lot of things. Not only affected you and I, but it affected creation. Nature is cursed because of Adam's personal choices, and we are sinners. Who is responsible? Well, understanding the role of sin and how sin has changed things, let's say this. When we talk about who is responsible, there are secondary and ultimate causes. For example, we have to distinguish between the two, don't we? A secondary cause, think of the lightning and the wind that came down in Job's day and killed God's family, or killed Job's family. The cause of that was the devil, right? The devil was, he was the secondary cause. But the ultimate cause was the Lord. He said, the Lord did that. Even Job said the Lord did it. He said, the Lord gave and the Lord taketh away. Because Satan went to God and God gave Satan permission to bring havoc into Job's life. Isn't that right? So the secondary cause was Satan. Satan brought havoc into Job's life, but God gave Job permission. So God was the ultimate cause of that. Now, the secondary cause of an earthquake is due to a fault between the earth's crust. The top layer of the earth's crust moves one way, and the under layer moves the other way. And when those two layers collide and hit, that's what causes an earthquake. That's the secondary cause. The secondary cause of a tornado is unstable atmospheric conditions combined with warm, moist air. The secondary cause of a hurricane is a large air mass heated and fueled by the warmth of the ocean. But the ultimate cause of these events is God. God sometimes rules through intermediate causes, but God is ultimately in charge and control. Do you believe the verse that says, "And He created all things, and He is before all things, and by Him all things consist"? God is responsible for all these things that happen. You say, God's responsible for a tornado? Absolutely He is. God's responsible for a hurricane? Absolutely He is. God's responsible for a tsunami? Absolutely He is. The father of modern hymnology wrote, Isaac Watt, listen to what he wrote. "There's not a plant or plow or flower below, but makes thy glories known." Now listen. And clouds arise and tempests blow. There's your hurricane by order from God's throne. Now let me talk about some of the disasters of Scripture. I think a disaster in Scripture would have to be the flood of Noah's day, wouldn't you say? That's been a little bigger disaster than the Hurricane Katrina that hit New Orleans. And I think that's a little bigger than what happened in Japan. Wouldn't you say the flood of Noah's day? I mean, I know there were thousands of people wiped out and it was a terrible thing in Japan and a terrible thing in Haiti and a terrible thing down there in New Orleans. But I mean, when you wipe everybody out and there's only eight left, is that more terrible? Okay. Who sent it? God. If you don't believe me, read Genesis 6, chapter 6, verse 17. God determined the timing, and God determined the duration and the intensity of the rain. Let me ask you another question. The plagues of Egypt, who sent the plagues of Egypt? God, okay. Who caused the drought of Elijah and Elisha's time? Well, particularly Ahab and Elijah's time. You remember that? Elijah said, there's not going to be doing a rain for 3 years until I speak. Who caused the drought? God. Who sent the earthquake when the sons of Korah rebelled against Moses and the earth opened and swallowed them up? Who did that? These are all natural disasters, people. Who was it that sent the storm when Jonah was on the boat going in the opposite direction of Nineveh? He was going in the opposite direction because he disobeyed. Who sent the storm? God sent the storm. Who's responsible for disasters? God is. God is. All those stories have one thing in common. That God is mysteriously involved. You say, explain it all. I can't. Because His ways are past finding out. I can't figure it out. Some of these acts of judgment were things that God used because He hated sin. But not all of them. Some of these acts, particularly in Job's case, was because God was testing, allowing Satan to test Job. There was no sin. It says Job was perfect in his ways. Some of these things were designed to deliver God's servants. Do you remember when there was an earthquake that delivered Paul and Silas from the jail in Philippi? God caused an earthquake in Philippi, delivered two guys out of jail. Who was responsible for that disaster? God was. God uses nature to do His bidding. God plays by a different set of rules. His ways are not my ways. And His thoughts are not my thoughts. His ways are higher than my ways, and His thoughts are way beyond my thoughts. That's God. How big is your God? Our mysterious God. Erwin Lutzer, pastor of the Moody Church in Chicago, said this, God is the creator, we are the creatures. Because God is the giver of life, He also has the right to take life. He has a long-term agenda that is much more complex than keeping people alive as long as possible. Death and destruction are a part of His plan. John Piper, who is a close friend of Dr. John MacArthur, pastor of the Bethlehem Baptist Church in Minneapolis, Minnesota, wrote this about disasters. God has hundreds of thousands of purposes, most of which will remain hidden to us until we are able to grasp them at the end of the age. Unquote. We infinite beings cannot fathom why God does and allows the things that He does. We are pretty wrapped up and big on ourselves when we think we can judge an infinite God because of what He does. We just don't get it, do we? The clay has no right to say to the potter, this is what you got to do with me. You see, we live by promises. We don't live by explanations. It's our role to trust when all of these disasters happen. And God delights in the faith that trusts no matter what. For without faith, it is impossible to please Him. Wow. Saul, when these disasters happen, and people come and they say, why did the hurricane hit New Orleans? We don't know that it was because of all of the pornography industry down there. We don't know that. That would be my bias to give that answer. But I don't know that. So I have to be cautious about giving a pat answer because my understanding is limited. And I don't see God's plan. And when you don't have a full understanding of a matter, it's better to close your mouth and not be a fool and remove all doubt. Isn't it? So that's the complexity of God. And that's the responsibility for these acts. Let's talk a little bit about the theology of it. You know, simply stated, storms and other natural disasters that disrupt our world and people's lives, I believe they're God's megaphone. And what are these terrible things supposed to teach us? Number one, I believe they're supposed to teach us that what is really important and valuable in life. Tragedies separate the trivial from the important, don't you think? Tragedies separate the temporal from the eternal. I don't know if you remember reading this or not, but in Luke chapter 13, it talks about the Tower of Siloam falling and killing 18 men. When the Tower of Siloam fell and killed 18 men, do you think the concern was, oh, we lost all those nice bricks? Or do you think the concern was, someone's husband died, some father, my brother was killed? Don't tragedies help to separate the temporal from the eternal, the trivial from what is really, really important? You know, Hurricane Katrina, I watched a lot of that on the news on television. I'm kind of a news junkie. I believe it brought a lot of people to a reality check. I didn't see anybody running around the streets of New Orleans saying, oh, I lost my new plasma TV. I can't find my cordless drill. Where are my golf clubs? What they were concerned about was, where's my family? Has somebody in my family lost their lives? You see, tragedy jerks us into reality and we discover what really matters. That's a part of the theology of disasters. What will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? What can a person give in place of their soul? A man's life doesn't consist in the abundance or in the amount of the things that he owns. What is important is a personal relationship with God through Jesus Christ. So the first lesson is we learn what is really valuable and important. I think the second thing we learn is we learn about the uncertainty of life. As you know, we lived in Campbell for a number of years, pastoring down there. And we lived right next to the water. Passamaquoddy Bay, they call it. We know what vapor is when that steam rises off that water and surrounds the house. There were times when you just couldn't see anywhere. The vapor. And then the sun would come out and all of a sudden the sun would just disappear. It always made me think of the verse, what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. It's kind of like that, if anybody uses a tea kettle anymore on top of the stove, it's like that electric kettle, you plug it in, and then all of a sudden the steam starts coming out the spout, and you unplug the water, unplug it because the water has boiled, and all of a sudden, where's the vapor? It was just there for a moment, and then it's gone. That's what life is. You know, for any of us, we don't live in a tragedy, disaster-free zone. There are none of those on earth. People who lost their lives in these natural disasters didn't get up in the morning and say, I guess I'm going to be drowned today. There's going to be a big wave come over Japan today. People would have said, you need to go to the loony bin. Death caught them all by surprise. Even that gentleman who was buried in Woodstock, who was crushed in a building in Haiti, Mr. Gallagher, didn't know that was his last day. Wow. You see, one of the theology of this is we need to learn about the uncertainty of life. Dan Miller, I don't know if he's a Christian or not, I know he's an apologist, he said this. Human existence on earth was not intended to be permanent. The Creator intended life on earth to serve as a temporary interval of time in which people are given opportunity to attend to their spiritual condition as it relates to God's will for living. Natural disasters provide people with conclusive evidence that life on earth is brief and uncertain. That's the theology That's the theology of a disaster. It helps us to divide the temporal from the eternal. And it helps us to know life is uncertain. It helps us to understand that we're not in control. That's kind of interesting because we think we are, don't we, sometimes? Our times are in His hands. It helps us to take God seriously now. You know, most people don't take God seriously now. I was studying this week. Matter of fact, on the way home in the plane, I was making notes for this. And it made me think of that farmer, that parable that Jesus told in Luke chapter 12. Remember that? Who had a bountiful year, and his barns were full. And he said, "This will I do. I'll tear down my barns and build greater." Remember that story? And God said to him, "Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee." And all his retirement dreams and plans went down the tubes. You know, a lot of people are contented in this life. Life is good. We go from day to day. But any day, it could be too late. Natural disasters are a preview of the judgment that is ahead. There is severe judgment ahead. And in Revelation, it's called the judgment of the great white throne. Revelation 20, verse 11. I've been thinking a lot this month about the Titanic. As you know, on the 15th of April, 1912, the Titanic sunk. I've been reading a lot about it on the internet. 1,517 people drowned in the waters of the North Atlantic. At the White Star Line's office in Liverpool, from which the ship had sailed, there was a huge board put up in the foyer. And on one side of the piece of cardboard, it said these words, "Known to be saved." And they listed the people they knew had been rescued and saved. And on the other side of the cardboard, it listed, "Known to be lost." You know the strange thing? It didn't mention that so-and-so was in first class, or so-and-so was in second class, or so-and-so was in third class. It just listed two categories, saved and lost. So it doesn't matter what you have. Whether you drive a first-class car or live in a first-class house, or whether you live in the backwoods instead of the boulevards, the issue really is, what's my relationship with God? That's the issue. Amos, the prophet, said it, didn't he? "Prepare to meet thy God." There is a dreadful day coming. I hadn't thought of this in years. But in the little church that I was brought up in, used to sing a song. "There's a great day coming. A great day coming. There's a great day coming. Coming by and by." Anybody here know that song? And it talked about the day when unsaved people are going to stand before the great white throne judgment. Boy, you know what we need to do? Take God seriously. Take God seriously now. Disasters are acts of God. You say, "I can't reconcile that." I can't either. God's too big. He's beyond me. His judgments are unfathomable. I can't trace them. I can't make reason with them. I can't figure them out. They don't make sense most of the time. His ways past finding out. I can't get it figured logically. I can't give a decent explanation. This is why this disaster happened in this place. I can't do that. Because I don't know. I don't know. No one on earth fully comprehends why God does what He does. But can I make this statement before I quit? When disasters come, God is not on trial. We are. We're the ones on trial. You know, when disasters come, you can get mad at God if you want to and curse Him. That was Job's wife's advice, wasn't it? Curse God and die. You know, when disasters come, you can curse him. Or you can cling to him and trust him in faith. Natural disasters really help us to decide how we respond to God. You know, some people walk around this earth and they have an attitude of entitlement. I'm a Christian, so everything is supposed to go good for me. And when I have things that are not so good, I'm not going to pay much attention to God and I'm going to stay away from church. You are so full of yourself, it makes me sick. This is not about you or me. We don't understand God. Because we're saved doesn't mean that life is always going to be wonderful and glorious and there's going to be no problems. There's going to be no problems on the other side. But there's tons of them here. Let me tell you, the golden years are full of them. I think the golden years are in heaven, where the streets are paved with gold. They're not here. Disasters are God's megaphone. The uncertainties of this life are a reminder to prepare for the certainties to come. Our mysterious God. Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. There are some things I really know about God, and I know for sure he loves me. And when I can't trace his hand and his acts, I can trust his heart. He that spared not his own son, but delivered him up for us all. He's the one looking after us. So there might be disaster left in my life. There might be trouble. There might be all of that. Look, that's okay. That's okay. Because ultimately, in the sweet by and by, there's a land that is fairer than day. O Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all